The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in this Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder if this is really a radio show that talks about God and religion, then why do you also spend so much time talking about movies? Oh, that's easy to explain. Some movies are so good, so inspired, we believe they came from God. We're not just talking about those Christian films where somebody turns on, here's Billy Graham on TV at the end. We mean real movies. And on the other hand, some movies are so bad that we could not stand before God someday in good conscience and answer to him if we did not rip them to shreds, showing no mercy. And we don't merely mean bad because of the movie's view of God. A bad movie is a bad movie. And if it has crummy acting or a script that looked like it was sold to the studio 12 scripts for a dollar. And what better time to talk about good or bad movies than Academy Award season? Now, yes, I know, don't call in. The awards were on last Sunday. You are listening to a new show. It's not a rerun. So why the belated commentary? Well, usually, film critic Mark Boubian has joined us once a year, the day of the awards, so that people could listen to our show and then watch the Oscars that same evening. But you see, in those days, I was on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. With our 6 o'clock p.m. show, we are on at the exact same time, and we're on at the exact same time last week as the Academy Awards. That left us with little choice than to bring Mark Boubian on this week. Mark, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me, even though it's a week late, Bob.
Better late than never, they always say.
Absolutely. And you know, I actually thought the reason I wasn't on was because our prediction track record was so pathetic that we decided to
Week I did come on the air and predict that even though we weren't doing the Academy Award show, I did predict that The Artist would win.
Okay, good job.
I also predicted one that didn't work. I predicted they'd give Glenn Close the Academy Award because she played a transgender, and she's a phenomenal actress, but I predicted they'd do it for that reason. Unbeknownst to me, Christopher Plummer was nominated for playing another gay person that came out of the closet. So if I'd have known there were two chances, I might have said one or the other. So I was close, but not real close.
Right. Well, you know. But, you know, Christopher Plummer has not received an Oscar in his whole life.
I was glad to see him win. And I know that how I didn't see the movie, but I'm sure however he did a wonderful performance.
Yeah, he's an amazing actor.
He is a great actor.
And every time I see him, I keep going back to The Sound of Music.
Well, that's what
he's
always
going to
be known for the most.
Yeah, but just that his career has such amazing longevity that you could look back at a movie like The Sound of Music. That's a seminal work of cinema history. And here's the guy that plays one of the main characters, and he's still making movies today. And he's not just making movies, he's making good movies.
And he's versatile. He plays one mean bad guy. He was in, what was it? The one with Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour where they went back through time.
Somewhere in time.
Yeah. He was the bad guy in that movie. And you wouldn't have even thought it was the same actor.
Right. He is absolutely versatile. Yeah. And who would have ever thought that Captain Von Trapp was gay? So there you go.
Well, the real Captain Von Trapp was not.
Right.
You know, one interesting thing about him in The Sound of Music, though, of course, Julie Andrews was doing her own singing. He was not a singer. He was an actor, a very famous stage actor. But he learned, they were going to have him sing, and he learned the songs, and he brushed up his voice, and he made some recordings, and the studio thought they sounded really good, but they just wanted to err on the side of polish, and so they went and dubbed him at the last minute, Anyway, but they must have picked an interesting person because whoever was doing the singing, it really sounded like it was him singing.
Yeah. I saw an interview with him. He was very gracious about it, too, which is also very impressive because he, you know, you could see him getting so upset that his voice was not included after all that work. But he said, you know, this is it's a business. It's Hollywood. They wanted it to be good. And I didn't meet the bar that they set the movie to. So I thought that was also very humble of him to say something like that. And so he's an amazing person as well as a good actor.
He absolutely is.
So congratulations to Christopher Plummer, finally, after all these years. But tonight we're going to talk about, I think, mainly the Best Picture nominees. And this year there were nine. Let me run through them really quick. The Descendants, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. The Help, Hugo, Midnight in Paris, Moneyball, Tree of Life, War Horse, and, of course, the winner was The Artist. And these were nine very good movies of the ones I saw. I wasn't actually able to see all of them, but I think between us, we got it all covered.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we'll just tell you, earlier in the week, Mark and I talked, and I don't think he had seen any of them yet, had you?
I had seen a couple,
yeah.
You had
seen a couple. And it's funny, I had seen a couple in the theater, which I liked one of them. The others I didn't care for that much. But I went out and I rented four of them, and the four that I rented I thought were just phenomenal. It's been a long time since I've watched four really good, well-made movies in a row. I must say it was quite a treat.
Yeah, I agree. It was fun. You know, the one year where the Social Network was the winner or was nominated, that year the movies were so bad and it was so depressing to have to deal with. Or it was Benjamin Button was the movie of choice that year. But, oh, man, that was a torturous year. Every movie was terrible. And I felt bad every time I finished one of the movies. This year, I'm glad to say that the movies were good and enjoyable. And so it would not be hard for me to recommend all of these movies. Even if we're critical of them, they're still very good films.
And it is so common for the Academy Award to give the Best Picture or even Best Picture nominations to those that do not deserve it. It was, and even though I didn't love The Artist personally, objectively, one of the reasons I predicted it would win Best Picture is that if you had to be objective, it was extremely clever and creative and brilliant and different. And to see that coming out of Hollywood these days, Hollywood and their five movie endings, that goes a long way with me.
Right. Yeah. It was a very original film. Now, one of the things, though, that's interesting, this for the last 3 years, they've had 10 nominees. This year, they had nine. Prior to that, they had been basically, for the history of the Academy, they'd run five.
Well, originally, in the awards, they were doing 10 or so. But
yeah, so they're
in our
back
lifetime, we were used to five being nominated.
Right. Now, I've really been a fan of that idea of them expanding to other movies because the idea was that they'd appeal to a larger audience. They'd have a wider interest because they'd be nominating movies from all different genres and all different kinds. So you'd have a summer blockbuster like, say, The Dark Knight thrown in with art movies like The Artist, for example. And then we'd have a wide range of movies and we could root for our favorite. And then we could say, oh, why did this movie win or why did this movie lose? And we'd have a really good a bar to sort of compare them against. Unfortunately, this year they really defeated the whole purpose of the nine, the ten nominees this year. So if you look at it now, eight of the movies are period pieces of the nine. Four of those, that's over half of the half of those or almost half the nominees were in the early 20th century period pieces. All of the movies were critical darlings throughout all of 2011. Every movie had great critical acclaim behind it. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but it illustrates that they really were not being expansive in their choice. They weren't being diverse.
And there was something else. Correct me if I'm mistaken. I believe most of them, not all of them, but most of them were released around Christmas time, which is what they want people to do so that they're fresh in the minds of the Academy.
Right.
But a movie that's completed its filming before Christmas or comes out just in time for the new year to be over, you know, we may be calling them the 2011 Academy Awards, but it's because most people are seeing them in 2012 that they stay in the Academy's mind. So,
yeah, I mean, The Artist
it's almost like cheating a little bit.
Yeah, The Artist is still in the theater right now. And they're going to keep it in the theater longer because they'll make more money now that it's won. There are several other films that are still in the theaters. It was hard for me to actually find some of the movies because they're in transition between being in the theater and not yet released on video. So some of them were very hard to get to see. But yeah, you're right. They were all late 2011 movies. And that's how they generally do it, though.
Well, I had a sad day because I went to Blockbuster to get four of them. And just making fair weather chit-chat, I asked a girl behind the counter, is Netflix putting you out of business? She says, actually, this weekend is our last day. Come Monday, it's going to be, you can buy these movies, you can't rent them. And in 2 months, we're closing down.
Wow.
She said not all Blockbusters, but their store and most of them. So it was kind of sad. I actually hadn't been to a Blockbuster myself in a long time. I was thinking, this is fun. It's been a long time since I've gone to Blockbuster to rent a movie, but alas,
apparently
I shan't be doing that no more.
Yeah, well, it had been too long, I think, was the issue there, Bob. Because everybody's saying that now. Oh,
and everybody's
been to Blockbuster.
Doing Netflix. Yeah. Of course, I'm not on Netflix yet. I don't have my TV set up to, I guess you can get them by computer or have them mailed to you. So.
Yeah, either way. One of the problems with Netflix, though, is that the studios are introducing what's called a rental window where they are not allowing the movies to be rented for 28 days, in some cases 2 months before you can rent them. You can only buy them in that period of time. Now, during the video era, it was the opposite, where they would only rent them for 20 days and then you could buy them after the 20 days because Blockbuster had this deal with the studios. But the studios have made so much money off of DVD that they want to sell movies more than they want to rent them now, and so that's why they're instigating this rental window. And I think it's going to be very detrimental to Netflix. It has been a problem for them because they don't have any product for a month after it comes out. You have to basically buy it.
Well,
aren't we
in a few years just going to be downloading everything anyway?
I don't know.
I grew up on books, records. I loved collections. And,
right.
And now I'll look at my DVD collection, which I know is behind the times and is not a Blu-ray collection. But still, even if we were talking about Blu-ray, it's just nice to be able to pull something off the shelf. It's like everything's online, and now even books, people aren't buying books. They're getting a Kindle. I mean, I guess books will always be here and movie collections will always be here because radio didn't go away when TV came out. And live theater didn't go away when movies came out. So I'm hoping it's the same, but it just, I don't want every single device in the world to be found on one computer iPad where you're watching your movies. And I mean, remember Smart, where his phone was in his shoe? We're practically there. Pretty soon that iPod,
we're past
you're going to get two
even.
Of them, and you're going to wear them as shoes, too, and it's going to toast your bread for you, too, and there's only going to be one device in the whole world.
Well, my only complaint, actually, I don't have a problem with being able to get stuff off of the internet or be able to download it or watch it. It's just that when you get it off the internet, the quality of film tends to suffer very badly. And so I will not watch a movie streamed from Netflix off of the internet. I will rent them on Blu-ray because for me, quality is imperative, and that's the only way to get really good quality still today is to get a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And I agree with the idea of owning
but
it,
I like,
having the
yeah,
copy.
Having
yeah.
it as a gift, looking at the box. I love it when they release a movie that shows its original marquee that was on the poster. I mean, I'm a nostalgic guy, but not known as so nostalgic that we don't understand it's time for a break and that we'll be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with short story writer, film critic, and rotating co-host, Mark Boobian extraordinaire.
Thanks, Bob. So why don't we talk about The Artist a little bit? Since it won, I think it's probably worthy of discussion, at least the Academy thought it was. And that's actually one of the reasons I liked the movie, because I thought it was, afterwards, worthy of discussion. It left me thinking after the movie was over. It didn't spell everything out, and I was kind of left with this, what was going on? Why? What was this movie about? What were they trying to say?
And I did think you'd like it. A lot of times I tell you you'll like a movie and you hate it. This time I told you you'd like it. And not only did you like it, but you liked it more than me. How about that?
Yeah, right. Well, there you go. You can never guess. I'm a moving target. I'm too hard to predict that. But it is true. Most of the time you tell me you liked a movie, I'm kind of like, uh-oh, I better watch out because, yeah, I don't ever like
it.
Yeah,
last time you were on the air, I finally gave you a copy of Miracle on 34th. I'm afraid to ask you if you
haven't watched it yet because I've been so busy watching the Academy Award movies.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't had a chance.
Okay.
But, now the artist is very interesting in this day and age that this movie would win an Academy Award. Now, let's just take a look at the technical side of the film, okay? It's a silent film. It's black and white. It's in the aspect ratio of your television set, which means it's not widescreen. It's
because
actually
that's
a square.
The shape that
that's
what screens
they,
were in those
in
days.
That day and age, right. So they did everything in that day and age. It's silent. There's just the soundtrack playing. Did I say it was black and white? I think I did.
Well, you know, I heard there were some people who didn't know what it was going to be about actually went and asked for their money back.
Right.
Because it was silent.
Yeah, what are you throwing us a silent movie for? Right. But here, now, in this day and age, which is there's scope widescreen, there's color, there's 7.1 surround sound, it's 3D, you've got screens that are three stories high, and the movie that wins is this one that harkens back to and is in the style of the 1900s. So I think that's a really interesting comment on, sort of a meta comment, as we would say in the computer industry, on movies in general.
Can I offer my opinion very quickly?
Go ahead. This is Nick, our board op, and he's also kind of a film buff. Go ahead, Nick.
I personally loved The Artist. I thought The Artist was actually, personally, my favorite movie of the year. I was shocked because I'm the type of guy that can go in and I can sit and watch a silent cartoon like an old Oswald or Felix cartoon because they're short. Go in and watch like a Buster Keaton short that are like about 30, 40 minutes, not really that short. I can't really sit through all of it. So I walked in and I watched The Artist and I couldn't believe it was 90 minutes because I looked at my watch at the end of the movie and I never looked at my watch once because I thought that the character development was so deep, so organic. The story was so well told. The script was so well done. The dog freaking stole the show, stole the show. I actually forgot that I was watching a silent movie because everything else was so well done. The basic foundations of a good, well-told story was so strong that none of the CinemaScope or the color or lack of any of that, lack of sound, mattered to me because everything else was so strong and so well done.
Very good. Well, you know, it's almost like you read my mind. You made my point for me exactly. And that's basically what I was going to say, that a good story is really what matters. A good character development, these are the things that really pull us in. So you could throw as much technical expertise, as much technical development, and as much technology to film as you want, but if the story is not well told, if the characters aren't compelling, you're not going to have a good movie no matter what you do. So here, the artist doesn't do any of these things, and just because it's such a good story, it's so well written and so well told, and it fits so well, they used the 1930s, 1920s style so well in telling the story worked perfectly.
For those of you who have not seen The Artist or don't know much about it, you should understand it's about a silent film star and how he deals with talkies coming out.
Right.
And how his career suffers because he can't make the change. But what they did is they made a silent movie about a silent film star.
Very good. Very good description, Bob. Very, very to the point. So, yeah, and like I said, it's so well told. And I think that is a very important, hopefully Hollywood gets the message of this film, that telling a good story is really what's key.
Well, I'm afraid the message Hollywood might get are some big board of producers sitting going, silent movies are evidently in. Let's make other silent movies.
That's the only danger.
Usually when there's an original message or an original movie, the monkeys don't get the cue to be original. They get the cue to be imitative.
Right. Well, you know, the only reason I'd say that that probably is not going to happen is these same people that would make these decisions have spent all this money investing in the modern technology that we have today. The three-story screens, the 7.1 surround sound, the 3D. So they are not going to want to stop making that kind of movie, fortunately. Because I actually do prefer the movies as we have today. I liked The Artist, but if every movie was like The Artist, I would probably still enjoy film very much, but what we have today, I enjoy more. So I like my 7.1 surround sound and my 3D. I love these technical achievements that we've made in film because it really has enhanced the storytelling.
Okay, now, but The Artist was more than just a silent movie. There was something else very creative that it did. And I remember while I was watching this, I was going, well, I hope the whole movie isn't going to be silent, but I was going, okay, it's about a silent film star, so they're doing it as a silent movie. And I was hoping that they'd start it out that way, and I was hoping that when talkies came out, that everybody in the movie that I'm watching would start talking, and it looked for a moment like they were about to start to do that.
Right.
He starts hearing sounds. I believe he even heard his dog bark. But then they didn't stick with that.
Okay, now there's a reason they didn't stick with it, though, because it was a dream.
And they were trying to show that he couldn't make the transition.
Correct.
Also.
Exactly. Very good, Bob.
But then when his girlfriend or the girl he liked started starring in talkies, and he goes to watch one of her talkies, and we're watching watching the subtitles for a talkie in silent. After a while, I'm going, okay, this was brilliant. This was clever, but it's starting to not work for me.
Right. Well, it still worked for me because I saw what they were doing. They were basically telling it from his point of view. So they stuck with it from his point of view, even when they were showing her movie.
Yeah.
Because he was in the theater watching her movie. So it's almost like we're looking over his shoulder. And so he's kind of locked into the silent world. He hasn't made the transition into sound yet. So we don't hear sound because he doesn't hear sound. So that's why I think that they stuck with that and why that still worked.
And I can appreciate that. And again, just to see anything creative in Hollywood these days goes a long way with me. And it's kind of a mixed review with me. And this happens occasionally with a movie where I think it's really well done. The guy that won Best Actor from this probably deserved it. I think there were other movies that I think could have deserved Best Picture too. But I don't mind that they gave it to this movie. It was certainly one of the best pictures of the year. But I had to walk out of the theater going, okay, objectively, I see what they were doing, and wow, how clever, how creative. But personally, I walked out of there going, man, I'm glad they don't make silent movies anymore.
Right. Well, that's sort of my comment, too. But, you know, I did like the way this movie was done, and I think that they did a very good job of telling the story. Now, I also like the theme of the film because it's a movie. To me, the movie's called The Artist. It's a movie about being an artist. It's a movie about art. That's sort of the theme of the film. He loses his ability to... He's an artist in the beginning. He enjoys the life that he's got. He takes a great joy and gusto in making these films. And then when the talkies come around, he can't find his voice, literally and figuratively. And so he can't make the transition to talkies. And so what happens to him as the movie progresses? Let's see after the break.
Okay, we're here with film critic Mark Boobian going through the Academy Awards, which were on last week, but we couldn't have talked about them last week because you wouldn't have been listening to us. You'd have been home watching the Academy Awards, so we're doing it this week. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle, so when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with Mark Booby, and we're going through the Academy Award nominees and winners from last week.
Thanks, Bob. So we were talking about The Artist, and so where did we leave off? With him not having a voice. That's what most of the movie deals with, that, his inability to find a voice in the world of sound. And being an artist, being a true person, being true to himself as an artist, because that is what he is good at, what he does, that's his talent. He's not able to make that transition. And the dream sequence we were discussing earlier, where he hears a little bit of sound, but that communicates to us that he doesn't have a voice in this new sound world. All of his fears are expressed in that dream, and all of them basically come true. He's cast off. He can't be a part of this life anymore. He loses everything, and that's what he was afraid of, and that's what happened. So what happens, though, is that ultimately he needs somebody to save him. He can't save himself. He can't bring about the artist. That artist that's in him cannot find expression any longer because he doesn't belong in this world. He's not able to make the transition. So he needs the help of his girlfriend, the girl that he's in love with in this film. And she basically makes this sacrificial, there's a sacrificial moment where she says, you know, I'm going to quit unless you hire him back after he's lost everything. And he's just it's a terrible tragedy that his life has become. And she said, you know, she wants him to be an artist again, and she's going to give up everything for that. So she is like a hero willing to sacrifice her life for him. And ultimately, she helps him find his voice. He can't do it on his own. It's through this the aid of this other person. And for me as a Christian, I see God's grace working here. It's as though God is working through this woman.
It was quite an act of mercy on her part.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's done out of love.
Yes.
And kindness.
She was a nice character from start to finish in this
right.
movie.
Right. Yes, she was.
She had no vices.
Right. She does have a moment of sort of becoming somewhat a little bit villainous. She's becoming part of that world that's rejecting him, and it's a tragedy again for him, but she's, unlike everyone else, she's able to reach out to him. She's able to see
and to look back and to realize not everybody's been able to take this ride with us, and we should show some compassion
and mercy. Right, exactly. So I think it's a beautiful film for that. You see, kind of the sacrificial element, the Christian element there that I really liked in this film, which I was very surprised to see, was a beautiful expressive thing in the movie. Now, what's also interesting about this film, there's another movie about movies, Hugo, which was Martin Scorsese's movie.
And this one I did not see.
Yeah, now it's so,
and you finally saw it.
Yes, I did.
You're not a huge Scorsese fan,
and
are you?
Still not a big Scorsese fan.
Oh, you didn't
imagine that.
You didn't like Hugo? Or?
No, actually, nobody did. It's supposed to be a children's movie. My children did not like it either.
Can you clear something up for me? Whenever I've seen that advertised, although it looks like it has live actors, the scenery looks very animated and surrealistic. Is that true?
It's live
scenery?
Action. Well, the thing is, every movie today has some computer.
Yes, but this one looked glaringly so.
No,
although
it's
I
not.
Was only looking at previews. I have to
okay,
admit,
so the backgrounds of the city of Paris in the 1920s is that's animated,
okay.
Absolutely. But everything is live action.
Okay. Did they intend for it to look animated, or did it
I
just
don't think
happen?
So.
Okay.
Yeah, it just is.
I couldn't tell if that was deliberate or. You know.
They may have. It could have fit in with the theme of the film because the movie becomes, it's a movie about making movies ultimately the end. But it takes.
So we have a silent movie about silent movies and a movie about making movies, and they both get nominated by the Academy Awards.
I told you that movies were very similar this year, so it sort of defeated the purpose of the 9 films. Here's a great example. And it also had a very similar theme where finding your purpose, you lose your purpose. And you've got to find it again. And what's interesting about Hugo is there's this child who has to help this elderly man find his purpose again. It's very similar to The Artist, where the girl has to make the sacrificial choice to help the artist find his purpose in life once again also. So These movies really have a lot in common, though I think The Artist is a much better movie. Hugo was very slow, not very well told, kind of
Why do you suppose it got nominated then?
Because...
And it won about four or five Academy Awards, too. They didn't win Best Picture, but it won...
No, it won Best Cinematography. It's well photographed, and I think that while I would have given cinematography hands down to Tree of Life...
Absolutely, or possibly The War Horse, but I would go with you. Tree of Life had fantastic cinematography.
Absolutely astounding, right. But Tree of Life is one of the oldest movies in the bunch, so it's one of the forgotten ones.
And coincidentally, it didn't win anything that night.
No, it didn't, which is a bummer, because it really deserved to win something. Certainly, cinematography. That's what I expected. It wouldn't win Best Picture, Best Director, but would win Best Cinematography. I'm disappointed it didn't. Hugo was still well photographed. The only thing is Hugo had so much computer animation in the large expansive scenes that I don't feel like that's deserving of a cinematography award. It's deserving of an animation or an effects award at that point. But it still was well photographed, very well colored, very beautifully done, very stylish. So, you know, even though I prefer The Tree of Life, I'm not totally upset that Hugo...
Well, it's like Meryl Streep. If it has Scorsese's name on it, I think it gets an obligatory nomination.
Right, and really that's, I think, the key right there, that the Academy loves Martin Scorsese.
I didn't even see it, but if Scorsese did it, count me in.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah. And it, yeah, I mean, the story-wise, it really didn't deserve an Academy Award. Now, one of some of the interesting things in it, though, now, I've shared this before with you, Bob, but maybe not on the air. I feel like Martin Scorsese's movies generally reflect badly on Christianity. My joke about Hugo was, how is Scorsese going to make God look bad in a kid's movie? Well, the answer is he didn't, thank goodness, because he actually...
Maybe
he's
losing it in his old age, and
well,
he's
he
not
picked
motivated
a different...
to make look God bad anymore.
Yeah, he picked a different screenwriter. The screenwriter that he had been using wrote Last Temptation of Christ, also wrote a movie called Bringing Out the Dead, which Scorsese did, a terrible, terrible movie, one of my most hated films, made Christianity look awful, but stupidly so, fortunately, because I didn't feel like, oh, I'm so offended. I just felt like, wow, that was dumb. Thanks, Martin Scorsese. But, you know, I was wondering what he was going to do in this movie. Well, what's interesting is there's some elements in the film where, unless you take a Christian point of view, it's really hard to explain some of the lines. Like the boy, he's expecting a message from his father. His father's dead. And then this automaton that he finds and he fixes, that's about the first half of the movie is about the automaton. The second half is about the filmmaking element. This automaton, when it finally comes to life and draws something, it is a message, and the message is important, but it's not from his life blood father, though they still consider it to be a successful message, and that the automaton did its job. It was supposed to give him a message, and the message worked, and the message was from his father, but not his earthly father. So what father could it possibly be?
Ah, very interesting. Well, that's one of Mark's trademarks that distinguishes him from other film critics, is that he finds Christian symbolism, and it's sometimes interesting to see that even a director like Scorsese, even if he didn't intend, when films are about life, we do find the imprint of God in there somewhere. And we'll find more imprints on Academy Award movies when we return. To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
You
You are listening to The Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture, Pop Culture Edition, today with film critic Mark Boubian.
Thanks, Bob. So let's see now. We have so many movies to talk about. I think I want to talk about my favorite movie, the one I enjoyed the most. And surprisingly to me, it was actually the Woody Allen movie, Midnight in Paris.
I get two for two because I told you you'd like that one, too.
Yeah, you did.
And you told me, well, I don't like Woody Allen that much. And I said, I don't like Woody Allen movies that much either. I like some of them. I think this was the best Woody Allen movie I've ever seen.
It may
now,
very
the fact
well
that
be.
Woody wasn't actually in the movie might have had something to do with that, but he did write it and he did direct it.
Right.
And he won the award for best screenplay.
Uh-huh. Let's see. Yeah, that's right. He did. Midnight in Paris, best writing of original screenplay. Very good, Bob. Good call. Well, I did enjoy it, and I thought it did have a good screenplay. It was very fun.
And it has Owen Wilson, so
I really like.
If Owen Wilson's in a movie, it's a pretty good clue that you're going to like at least something. Even The Wedding Crashers, which was a horrible movie, was funny for the first 30 minutes due to Owen Wilson.
Right. Well, yeah, I agree. So, and I think one of the funny things about Owen Wilson is he's a perfect replacement for Woody Allen. Woody Allen kind of
I didn't think of that, but he is. He's the part that Woody would have played.
Yeah, exactly. And Woody is often the guy who just doesn't know what's going on. He's sort of like lost in his own movie and he's kind of whines about it a little bit. And, you know, what's,
Owen wasn't quite as whiny as Woody.
No, he's not whiny, but he has
the intimidation, not feeling really confident.
Right. He's perplexed through the whole movie until maybe near the end he finally figures things out. But he's the perfect perplexed individual.
And what an original story. This is a guy that wants to be a writer, and he walks into this, he gets picked up by this carriage, or not a carriage,
a cab,
but an old style cab
automobile
that looks like it's from like the 20s in Paris. And they bring him into this restaurant, and he starts meeting people like Pablo Picasso, but then
Hemingway's
the one I was thinking because he's a writer. He actually gets to talk to Ernest Hemingway.
Right.
And these people are reviewing his work for
him.
Right.
He gives it to someone to review. Yeah. So it is a pretty funny movie in that regard. And it's also a profound movie. It has some interesting things to say because he's looking to the past sort of with this nostalgic view. And that's what the book that he's writing in the movie is about. It's about a guy who owns a curio shop of nostalgic antiques, and that's why he owns the curio shop. And then that reflects upon Owen's Wilson character, and that's why he's going back in time to the 20s, this particular era, because this is the era which he looks at with kind of wide eyes. And so it kind of builds on that theme. And then there's another step back in time where they go back even further, and that's when the carriage, Bob, that you were talking about actually picks them up. So there is a carriage in the movie, but
it picks them up at the stroke of midnight, which is why it's called Midnight in Paris.
Right. So when the carriage comes there, he's already gone back to the 20s, and then from the 20s he goes back even further, I think another 40 years or so into the 1800s.
And they
so,
kind of show how it starts out with them talking about him being somebody who's nostalgic for the past, like he wishes he'd been born. And you kind of realize that no matter what era you're born in, we tend to, with our hindsight, glorify the past. But every age has its own peculiar problems with history.
Right, exactly. Very good, Bob. Well, you know, he spells it out, though. Now, this is the difference between Woody Allen and, say, the creator of The Artist, where Woody has a tendency to kind of tell you what his movies are about. Another movie that of Woody Allen's that I really liked was called Sweet and Low Down. Woody Allen is in it in a couple of shots, but he's not actually a character in the film. And Sean Penn is the main character of that film. And it's a movie about a jazz guitarist. And one of the things that they say about him is that you can't create great music unless you experience great pain. True pain leads to true art. And that's the theme of Sweet and Low Down. But we're told that in the movie, and it's not until he experiences
It's not told
pain
in a subtle way. It's told directly.
Way. Yeah. And it's not problematic. It's not like he's banging you on the head with the theme. He just happens to tell you it flows through the dialogue. So
you were saying a moment ago that's different from The Artist.
The Artist, which
they can't
tell
you anything in The Artist because they don't talk
it's
in
silent,
The Artist.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. There's no dialogue with. But The Artist, and there's many movies where the theme is very subtle, and that's why I like The Artist. I got to walk away and think about The Artist for a day or two afterwards because I had, you know, I'm mulling through what was going on in my head. The Woody Allen movie I enjoyed in the moment, and when I walked away, I walked away and it was done. I can look back and say I enjoyed it, but I'm not looking back and poring over it with this thought right. to what the theme was about.
Because we remember more what we have to figure out for ourselves if it's not handed to us on a silver platter.
Right, so that's the strength of the artist. And that maybe that's a weakness of the Woody Allen movie. My wife actually said, when we finished the movie, I wonder if it would have been more effective not to tell us the theme of the movie and let it leave it up to us to figure out. And it's a good question. I actually don't know because you can't answer the question because he did tell you, so there's no way to.
Well, on the other hand, a movie should either entertain or have a message. This entertained and had a message. It was very entertaining. I've laughed out loud, particularly between him and his and the woman he was engaged to. And
right.
Usually in Hollywood these days, this is going to sound like I'm trying to pit men against women. I'm not. I like men. I like women. I like all of you, okay? But a lot of times in Hollywood, if there's a problem with the relationship, it's because of the guy. And in this particular case, the woman he was engaged to was just a piece of work, but it was done in such hilarious ways, especially when he suggests to her that she might be cheating on him. And she's, well, of course I'm cheating on you. Now you
get over it.
You just get over it. Deal with it like it's all your problem.
Right. It was his problem.
I was just laughing out loud. It was well acted. It was well written.
Right. That's a Woody Allen. I could see that work. It works perfectly in a Woody Allen film. Get over it. You know? Yeah. That was a great scene. I loved it. Yeah.
I remember once I was in a debate with Dan Barker and he quoted Woody Allen. Woody Allen, at least at that time, was an atheist. And says Woody Allen says, I'm convinced there's no God. And I'm convinced there's no heaven, but I'm packing a change of underwear just in case I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's Woody for you. Yeah. I think the other funny thing about this scene is that Owen Wilson doesn't figure it out. Ernest Hemingway does. That's who figures out that his wife's to be is cheating on him.
Yeah, and of course they don't mention that the real Ernest Hemingway did eventually kill himself. So talk about having to have pain.
Right. True.
And Hemingway was, I've only read one piece of Hemingway, Islands in the Stream, but he was a profound and deep thinking writer.
Right. So, yeah, he was.
I could just feel, you and I are both writers, Mark, and I'm just sitting here thinking, wouldn't it be a trip to walk into a room and get to have a conversation with Ernest Hemingway?
Right.
I mean, that was it was almost a vicarious thrill watching.
Though I think I get steamrolled after, because I'd look like Owen Wilson when he's talking to Ernest Hemingway, like, what the heck is going on here?
And I probably wouldn't like what Hemingway had to say about my work either, so
maybe
I don't really want to ask.
Well, I think he also had a very profound moment where he said, Owen Wilson says, will you read my work and tell me what you think? And he says, you're a writer? I hate it. I hate your work. It's because I'm a writer too. Either I'm going to say I love it because, or I'll say I hate it because I don't like it, or I'll say I hate it because it's good and I'm jealous.
And I'm jealous, so I'll still hate it. Yeah, exactly.
So there was a little bit of profundity coming.
Well, that's kind of in the opposite way. That's why you and I love every movie we go to, because if we love it, we love it. If we hate it, we have so much fun tearing it apart.
Yeah,
it's just a win-win situation.
Right, there you go. You can't lose. But yeah, this was a very entertaining film, and I enjoyed it. And I really did enjoy the Ernest Hemingway character and the acting. Very impeccable, very good movie.
Okay, now you didn't see The Help, right?
I did.
You did see The Help. Okay, so I'd like to talk about that.
Absolutely.
I thought that was a phenomenal movie. I had hesitations about seeing it, but I think, and again, every movie that I saw of these nine, and I think I saw all but two of them, I thought they were all first rate.
All good.
I think I'd have to say that I enjoyed The Help the most, but we'll talk about them when we come back.
All right.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity,
and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
This is Bob Siegel with film critic Mark Boobia and going through some of the winners and losers, but uncharacteristically, pretty good crop of movies at the Academy Awards. A few years ago, it was the curious case of giving the award to Benjamin Button.
Right. All losers that year. This year, all winners.
Very good.
So yeah, it was. I'm very happy.
And Billy Crystal was back. You don't watch the awards,
no,
do you?
No, I don't.
Now, that surprises me. You love movies, but is it just because...
I just am not a big award show person.
Glamour, okay.
Yeah, you know, the thing is when I was a kid, that was basically the only award show my parents would watch, but I just never caught on.
Okay, so if you ever sell a screenplay and they give you the Academy Award, are you going to be George C. Scott and stay home?
No.
Okay.
I will go. Right. If I ever get invited, even if I'm not nominated, I will be there in a flash, that's for sure.
Okay, the Help. I want to just say a little bit about it, and then I'll let you go with it. It was just a phenomenal movie. I don't usually get teary-eyed when I watch a movie. I was literally crying in several places when it was over. It was such a, well, certainly a heavy story with a heavy message, but so moving when we saw the acts of heroism from some of the people. And it had a disgusting scene in it, which I wish they hadn't put in there. But on the other hand, it was so integral to the story that I almost had to accept at this time. One thing I will say, as I was expecting it to be an agenda movie, especially since I heard that there are now people lobbying in California for them to charge a minimum wage, even if somebody just wants to hire a maid to come to their own house for a couple of hours a week. And I understand that we have to have some kind of regulation for businesses, but in the privacy of somebody's home, I have a problem with that. But on the other hand, just things were so horrible with the Jim Crow laws back in the 60s. And when I saw the movie A Time to Kill, I had read the novel first. And they put something in the movie that the novel did not put there. And it bothered me because we had this attorney that was really sticking out his neck and risking his life to defend this black man who shot some people that raped his daughter. But at the end of the movie, the black guy tells him, the African-American guy that he's defending tells him, you're still my enemy because you're white. All white people are my enemies. And I was expecting to see no white person in the movie painted in a positive light. And most of them were not painted in a positive light. And most of them did not deserve to, because most of them were not in Mississippi in those days. But the few women, the woman writer and the woman who was becoming friends with the housekeeper, the one who was kind of ditzy.
On the other side of the
her
tracks,
and her
yeah.
husband, the few people that were able to break out from that in a culture where it would have taken some courage, standing up against racism before it became a politically correct, fashionable thing to do, standing up ahead of their times. It was just a movie that shows that much heroism. And this woman writer, her mother was a horrible racist. But at the end of the movie, her mother takes her aside. And I'll never forget, it's one of the best lines I've ever heard in a movie. She says, "Sometimes courage skips a generation. Thank you for bringing it back to our family." Mark, I'm kid you not, I literally wept when I heard that. And I know I'm going to sound like a big wuss to people, but I don't care. That is how profoundly affected I was by this film.
Yeah, well, that was a good line, a brilliant line. And just a few things to say. First off, a little correction. The mother wasn't actually a racist per se.
Well, she didn't have the courage to stand up to her racist friend.
Exactly. Yes, she didn't have the courage to stand up.
Okay, you're right. That is a much better way to put it.
And I think that was one of the key elements to The Help, where there were other women who kind of just sort of went along with the crowd. And then there was one character who was clearly over the top, evil, bad, a terrible woman. And she's kind of almost browbeat a few of the characters into submission. But they were willing to submit to her, so they still are culpable. But I think that's there's a difference there between following what everyone else is doing and deciding for yourself and being full-blown racist to the core on your own.
Right, and that's how evil takes over a culture, because usually it's only one or two people. I mean, obviously the Bible says
right.
We're all sinful, but the Bible draws a distinction between being sinful and just being downright evil, where you have no virtues left in you at all. Very few people are evil, but the cowards and or the gullible people that follow the evil people, that is the recipe for a poisonous culture.
Right, and that's definitely what I felt we saw in The Help, the cowards following the evil people. Fortunately, there were a few heroic people, as you said.
But it makes the heroes stand out, or in this case, heroines stand out so much more.
Right, absolutely.
They had so much more to lose and to put on the line.
Right. Now, this is sort of ties in with some of the stuff I liked about The Help. Now, viewing it as a movie about racism, and at your point about vilifying the white people in other movies versus, you know, making all the black people good, all the white people bad, sort of like Titanic, where rich people evil, poor people good, you know, that sort of blanket casting and painting of characters. They didn't do that in The Help, and that's why I appreciated it so much when I could see there were good and bad primarily we're looking at the white people, but there were good and bad of the white people.
Well,
I'll
give them being primarily bad in Mississippi in those days,
right,
under the Jim Crow laws, but still, there were a few heroines.
Good people. And so that gave it a sense of reality, because we know that people aren't all just pure black and white, good, bad, that there was a sense of similitude in this film where we could see this looks real. This looks like what people are really like. And so that's something that I appreciated in the film. Now, another element to that is, you know, sometimes I see something, there's a slight against Christianity when, like, for example, the evil woman uses God to justify not giving money to a black person.
Yeah.
Okay, now, but bear with me, though, for a second, because at first it comes across as, it's just another one of those examples of Hollywood just trashing on Christianity, because, you know, she takes God's name in vain, basically. She says, it's not me, it's God that's telling me to not give you this money, to not be merciful, and to be cruel. You know, God's telling her to be cruel, right? But what we see, though, in the film is Christianity plays a primary role in the heroism that we see. There are good, standing, wonderful Christians in the film. The whole motivation for what happens in the film comes about because of a sermon
in an African American church, and it was
yes.
a wonderful sermon.
Absolutely.
Absolutely wonderful.
So we see both sides of the coin. Absolutely, there are hypocritical, evil people that take God's name in vain and beat you down and tear you apart by thinking that just saying God's name will get them something, you know?
And by the way, that is what the Bible really means when it says don't take God's
Absolutely.
Name.
Absolutely.
Don't claim to be doing something in the name of God that you're not. It doesn't mean don't cuss.
Don't cuss.
No, I'm not saying God wants you to cuss, because I'm
right.
sure he doesn't, but I'm just saying that's not what that commandment
yeah.
means. The commandment means don't be claiming to do something in the name of God that you're not really doing for God.
Right.
Or don't take a vow to God that you're not really going to fulfill.
And this is a case of somebody doing that. And so we see people doing that all the time in society, and that's why people get bummed about hypocrites in Christianity, because there really are hypocrites out there. But let's not just paint with a single stroke. There are good Christian people out there, too. And I like that this movie showed both sides of the coin. And if anything, well, absolutely, the Christians come out on top. They look good. The Christians are the ones that are really fighting for what's right. But it also shows it realistically. Like, it's not easy being a Christian. It's not. I mean, it's not easy being human.
It's not easy being a real Christian.
A real Christian,
it's easy to
yeah.
go to some church. It's not
right.
easy really taking the stands that Christ wants us to take.
And here are women taking a stand that I have never been asked to take in my life, and I don't think I ever could. And they lived this life, and they did something, and it was amazing. And it was truly doing it for God. And if I could ever have the courage to do something like that, I wish I could. You know?
It's a very moving movie. Only one problem, Mark. I used to love eating chocolate cream pie. I'm not sure I'm ever going to be able to do that.
Right.
Again.
I may be turned off by that, too.
Well, there's a couple of movies we didn't get to. I thought The War Horse was beautiful cinematography. I liked it. Unfortunately, it looked to me like something that was recipe made for the Academy Awards and reminded me of The English Patient.
Right.
That doesn't mean it still wasn't a good movie, but it was one of those where I'm going, if they weren't trying to get an Oscar, would they even have made this movie?
Right.
And I don't know the answer to that question, but if you're starting to wonder, then it's
tears you out of the story.
But you know, you haven't seen that one though.
No, not yet.
But it was still a good movie. I would still recommend it. Well, Mark, we'll have you on again soon.
Thanks, Bob. We didn't get
through all of them. Time always goes by quickly, and I will be back. And folks, next week I am debating a Muslim apologist. We're going to have a Christian apologist with a Muslim apologist. My friend Mike Friedenberg is going to come on and moderate, so that just because I'm the show host, I will not get more time than him. Mike will bust my head to the wall if I don't give this guy equal time. So come hear a debate between a Christian apologist and a Muslim apologist. We plan to hold the debate in a civil, respectful fashion. That's always our plan, at least. We will see you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.